Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 88 of Nerd Pride Radio. 88, the year I graduated, and a lucky number in China, neo-Nazi shorthand for Heil Hitler, and the number of crazy that Beatrix had to fight in Kill Bill. But also, a movie. Who knew? I went to go search for the number 88 for this podcast, and normally, 88, the number, or whatever number it is going to be the first thing to show up in a Google search. And instead of that this time, it keeps showing me results for the movie named simply 88. And I'm like, well, I've got a week before I have to record. I should really watch this film. So I did. And crazy, weird, kind of worth watching. I would recommend it. I would recommend it. You should see it. It is a... you get the idea. It's an amateurish film. And when I say amateurish, I mean, it's well done for what it is, but it's got some beats missing to it. It actually has, the star of it is a woman named Catherine Isabel, who I am not familiar with, but more on her in just a second. And then the bad guy is Christopher Lloyd. Christopher Lloyd. Go figure. And it is a story of a woman who finds herself in a diner in the middle of nowhere with a gun in her backpack, and she has no idea how she got there or why she has a gun. And so we wind up telling a story in two parts of how she got to where she is and then what happens afterwards. And so the two stories are told simultaneously. And it has the makings of a really, really good film. This Catherine Isabel, the lead actress, and Christopher Lloyd, and in fact, pretty much everybody else who shows up on camera in here are all fantastic over actors. I mean, just spectacular. They chew up a scene everywhere they go, sometimes just with facial expression, sometimes with, I mean, it's really crazy, and it's worth watching for that. The problem with it is there is one character in this film that is out of place. One character that, and you'll know her when you get to her. And yes, you know, you're seeing her on camera going, why is she not as good an actress as everybody else in this film? What am I looking at here? And afterwards I go to look it up. That was the director, April Mullen, who, like I say, did a fair job of directing the film, but then felt she needed to insert herself. And so suddenly the pieces all come together that, it's a story being told non-linearly, with lots of ultra violence in it. It doesn't make a lot of sense until you kind of piece these things together later. Oh, the director wants to insert herself into the scene as one of the craziest characters in the movie, but doesn't quite have the acting chops to pull it off. It's Quentin Tarantino. That's what she's doing. I get it. And the influence is really obvious there. And the flaws that I find with the film, other than her inclusion, the other flaws I find with the film, I think may not even have been her fault as a director. I think there's every possibility that when she got done and she had her finished masterpiece in her hands, there's every possibility that a bunch of producers all got together and went, oh, yeah, but, you know, are people really going to understand what's going on? I mean, you've got her with two different personalities and she's doing this here and then you switch back to these scenes. Are people really going to be able to follow that? You know what? Maybe we should explain it to them. And that's where the movie opens up with nothing but a black card that explains what a fugue state is. Explains that sometimes people lose time and they will enter in a completely different personality during a fugue state. They essentially give you the entire explanation of what's going on in an opening title card. Stupid. Stupid. We absolutely didn't need it because, A, we've all seen plenty of movies like this, and we've all seen plenty of cases that have something like it. We would have figured out, trust me, we were all smart enough to figure out, and I'm guessing that that's something that the director did not choose to put in. And there's other little things like that where you feel like the movie explains a little bit too much. And I want to be generous because I like what she's done with this movie other than putting herself in it. Just like I don't think Tarantino should put himself in most of his own movies. But other than that, I'm willing to chalk up all the rest of it to, yeah, you know what? I bet this was someone in post-production. I bet once she got done filming it, she lost control at the editing stage that someone else wanted to make sure that we knew what was going on. Someone else wanted to handhold us through it, which is kind of too bad. Anyway, I'm still in my opening sequence here. I've gone on way, way, way too long about this movie, 88. But you should watch it just, you know, to sync up with the episode, right? Because you want to keep current. Anyway, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me.
How are you doing?
Thank you, Lisa. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus like 7 other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. My co-hosts this week, I have Pinto and Flounder. All right. Before I get right into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, we got to do some meta talk first.
Oppenheimer!
Yeah, meta talk. I'm pulling back the curtain, talking about the podcast, the website, stuff going on. And first off, I'm recording in a different location. I don't know how the sound quality is going to be here. I've got some background noise, some stuff going on. I'm not going to be recording long. It's going to be a short episode today, so I'll just apologize up front for that. So if the sound is off this week, I'm sorry. That's what's going on. I'm going to do my very, very best. But more important than that, the real reason for the meta talk is my forums are dying. They've done this before, but pretty much anything you want to do on the forums is going to cause a little error or a little hang up or something. They don't load fast enough anymore. They give errors whenever you try and post anything, and so you have to refresh or go back and try again. They pretend like they're not sending any of the private messages, even though they're sending all of them, sometimes many times. And so therefore, the forums are a little broke. And last time this happened, it lasted for about 3 or 4 days, and then suddenly things miraculously fixed themselves, which made me think it's my web host. But I don't know. What's going on for me is, you know what, these forums were out of date when I installed them. They were simultaneously, I run forums on PHP-BB is the system I use, and I'm on PHP-BB2, and when I put them out on version 2 because, well, that's what my old forums were. I was familiar with it. I didn't have to learn anything new. Even though they had already released version 3 at that point, they were still supporting both. So I went with 2. Well, they very quickly discontinued supporting number 2, and now it's only version 3 that's out there. And so I should have updated years ago, and I just never have, and so I'm sorry. I'm working on getting some new forums installed. But, you know, things get busy. So as soon as I can, I will. In the meantime, everything on the forums actually works. It just takes a couple extra minutes, you know? Well, moments, seconds, which is an eternity in internet time. And so, therefore, all through this podcast, I always encourage you to come to my forum, sign up, send me a message, hang out, we'll have fun. And I still encourage that. Please do it. But also be aware that it's going to be a little bit of a hassle for a while until I sort this out. Either it's going to magically fix itself, or I will have finally gotten off my butt and gotten some new forums installed. Either way, it's going to be resolved soon, and we'll make it better. So keep coming by. Keep sending me Podomatics. Keep communicating with me. You know, talk to me on the forums, or if they're too buggy for you, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. I'm there. Email even. Even email. I can do that. So that's what's going on. But enough of all that. It is time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me, where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and the best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, first thing on my master list, it's my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide.
Role-playing games, video games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. And I've got some longer bits, but I'm going to save those because I'm short on time this week. The only one I'm going to bring up this time. Anyway, here's my quick story. In Pathfinder, we have just gotten to the Snake Lady Tower, and we are in really bad shape because we kind of rushed in ahead of ourselves. We are in way over our heads, and I think we are going to get slaughtered systematically here and our broken bodies tossed from the top of this 200-foot clock tower. Pretty sure that's what's going to happen. And I'm explaining to my kids how our characters got into this situation. Well, we went to the clock tower because we talked to the crows, and they explained to us that this is where they deliver messages. And, whoa, 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 you talked to the crows? I'm like, well, yeah, they were messenger crows that have been going back and forth. Crows that work for the bad guys. Well, yes, but that's not the point. They're just animals. We had to speak with animals spell, and so we spoke to the crows, and they gave us a vague description, and we figured out where they were going. It was pretty easy. And so my son Aiden says, well, you realize you shouldn't take advice from crows. I mean, they do call a group of them a murder. You understand that. You are taking advice from a group of something named a murder. I'm like, whatever. Turns out it was. I still think I think the crows were just fine. I think we were right to trust them. I think we just should have done some better preparation on the way in here. But the reason that was significant is because I then tell the same story to Joel, who is familiar with the Rise of the Rune Lord's adventure path. And I'm telling Joel the story of where we are and how we got to this place. And he says, really? Because you know a group of crows is called a murder. Why would you trust them? I'm like, what is this with you people? And so, to me, it was just funny that I got that exact same thing from two different people. Funny to me. So anyway, we're probably going to die. Not all of us. I'm guessing that maybe we'll get lucky. Maybe we'll get really lucky. Maybe the gods and the Dungeon Master will take pity on us and find a way to spare us. Or, more than likely, one or two of us are going to die a horrible, horrible death, and the others will barely escape with our lives. Or we'll pull it out in the end, but again, with the loss of one or two of us. I'm really sweating this one out. So anyway, and I have other stuff for the gaming table. Again, this is going to be an abbreviated podcast today. So I'm going to table that, put it back on the master list where it came from, and we'll get to that stuff next week. So there's my little teaser. You don't even know what it's going to be about. You just know I have a topic that I've been working on for a while now, and it's time to get it out here. But next week. In the meantime, what's next?
Don't know much about history.
Oh, that's what's next. It must be our unnamed history segment. And I was looking, and I can't remember where I ran across it. It was some, I know where it was. It was some, I don't know exactly where, but some clickbait list of, you know, seven incredible things that changed history, or, you know, nine unbelievable things that you get, or something like that. And, it was one of those facts out there that says that Pope Gregory the Ninth issued a papal decree at some point where he declared that black cats were evil because they were tools of Satanists, or cats were emblematic of Satan, or in league with Satan, whatever. And so the Pope declares black cats to be evil, and then all across Europe, it's open season on black cats, and the reduction in the cat population led to an increase in rats, which led to the spreading of the bubonic plague, the Black Death, which killed half of Europe at the time. So therefore, because this Pope decided that cats were evil, plague killed all of Europe. That's one of these facts that's out there. And I've seen it before, but this time I saw it and it occurred to me to wonder, really? He declared black cats evil, and so people wound up killing just all cats indiscriminately based on the Pope's decree, and that's what led to the plague? Is that really even possible? So I'm researching, and it turns out this is not an easy one to pin down, because there are a couple of authoritative-sounding sources that name this as a fact, but I can't trace where they got their information from. I mean, I'm looking for supporting evidence that says that the cat population was noticeably reduced because we saw whatever. I'm looking for something substantive that tells me that we were really slaughtering cats wholesale, and we slaughtered them enough to make this kind of difference. It's possible. But then also, look, in the same research I'm doing, there's some evidence, and again, I don't know how strong, but some evidence that people are trying to claim that, you know what, the Black Death at the time, and this was 1233-ish that Pope Gregory would have done this. And he did, in fact, issue, it was called Vox in Rama, and Vox in Rama was the papal statement, decree, letter, whatever it was, where he did mention, he was talking a lot of Satanist stuff, because apparently at that time, demonizing your opposition was becoming very big. It was no longer that the people who were opposed to you, it was no longer enough that they worshiped different gods from us. It's that, no, their worship involves worship of Satan. If you're worshiping another god, it's not just another god. It's not some other benevolent deity or some other set of ideals. It is, no, you are literally worshiping Satan if you don't worship according to our strictures. And so therefore there was a lot of talk on Satanism at the time. And so he did issue something that did mention black cats and did mention that they were evil because they were associated with Satanists. But then there's also, and here's where I was going. Sorry, I changed topics in mid-sentence there. There's also some evidence that the plague may not have been bubonic. It may not have been spread by fleas and animals. It may have been spread pneumonic. It may have been a pneumonic plague, which would have meant it would have been passed from person to person, like the flu or the cold, that the cats, the rats, the fleas may have had nothing to do with it at all. And all of this is completely spurious. I don't know if there's enough evidence to say that that's for sure. I have no idea. Again, it's hard to track down anything as being substantive on this topic. But it also occurred to people because apparently cat-killing festivals in Europe have been popular for centuries. That there are towns that even today still have their cat festivals where nowadays they no longer slaughter actual cats. They just, they kill them symbolically in their summer parade is. But apparently it used to be a real thing that, there was once a really vivid description of this grand ship, a boat made that sailed down Main Street through town. And this ship apparently was packed full of cats. And so as the thing is coming through for their, cat killing festival parade, whatever it is, they light the thing on fire. And there, again, vivid description of the mewling of cats and the crackling of flames. And they burned a whole bunch of cats alive inside of a boat because it's a cat killing festival. But again, did we kill enough cats to really let the rat population run that rampant? Or were the rats simply rampant because of increased urbanization at the time, because we're packing more and more people into big cities and sanitation was for crap, I guess. No pun intended on that. And for that matter, and I'm not, at this point, I'm not making, again, I'm not making a point. I very rarely wind up making actual points. I'm just presenting stuff that I found was interesting as I did my research. But two really interesting things were, one, the association of black cats with witches. How did that come about in the first place? Or Satanists or whatever. And it turns out, because, all right, who's most likely to get accused of being witches? Think stereotypically. It's going to be old women who live alone. Yeah, you know what? What do old women who live alone always have? Cats. Crazy old cat ladies. They've apparently, it's not just nowadays, apparently old women who live alone have always tended to have cats. Sometimes lots of them. And so therefore the association with these women who are stereotypically accused of witchcraft, at least in popular myth, also would be the kind of people who would tend to have a lot of cats. Correlation does not equal causation, right? All right. But also the idea that we have all these cat-killing festivals, programs, parties, whatever it is you want to call them, there was also a suggestion that, people were going to be doing that anyway. It had nothing to do necessarily with the papal decree. It had nothing to do with Pope Gregory saying that cat, because he said specifically black cats were in league with Satan. It was a killing of black cats. It wasn't a killing of all cats. But they're saying, people may have been torturing and killing cats simply because cats are pests. I mean, yes, cats are great for keeping the mice and the rats away. You know, if you've got your big piles of grain, your bins of grain out there after harvest, great to have a bunch of farm cats around because it drives away a lot of the small critters that are going to get into your grain. Awesome. But also, have you ever been on a farm where the cats have kind of run wild? It is horrifying because cats, I mean, again, they're not eating your crops, but cats can be just as much of a nuisance as anything else. I mean, there are a lot of them, and they breed like crazy, and they will overrun the place in no time. And so it may have simply been that people were killing cats because there were just a lot of damn cats, and you know, we needed to clear them out. I remember my in-laws at one point, they own a big acreage. They've got some animals out there. They grow some food. They've got some stuff. And they, at one point, I think may have had 20 cats that were running around because she put out a little bit of cat food for her own cat, and it attracted some of these other feral animals to the farm, and you know, they weren't going to kill them or anything like that, so there were a lot of cats around, and they kept breeding, and there were a lot of cats on this farm for a while. And then one weekend, my brother-in-law comes home to go hunting, and he brings along a friend of his who brought his hunting dog, a really good dog, by the way, great dog, and brings along his hunting dog, and nobody even thought anything about it. Apparently, that day, that night, the dog was out on the farm, and he just went around killing cats. Just tore them up. And they haven't had a cat problem since then. I mean, he got all of them. And no one realized he was doing it. If they had known that, they would have put him inside, or they would have put him in a pen, or they would have done something. Because no one was asking for wholesale cat slaughter. Although, once it did happen, man, it's kind of a relief not to have all those cats underfoot. I mean, it changed things. I mean, no one did it on purpose, but holy crap, kind of nice not to have 20 cats running around. So I can understand the sentiment of medieval farmers and villagers who have their places overrun by cats. I get that. So anyway, again, did Pope Gregory have anything to do with causing the plague? I don't know. My gut says no. I doubt it. But again, I have no evidence either way. And I have, I have authoritative sounding people on the internet who are telling me it has to be true, so who am I to doubt them, right? Anyway, that was my unnamed history segment. And since I can't see the rest of my script here, I have no idea what's next. I have a Nerd Pride book report in here. No, oh, that's because I was going to start reading my brother's book this week and then didn't. So we'll go ahead and skip that one. Don't tell Kyle, honestly. He has no idea. Again, he'll find out eventually, but by the time he finds out that I still haven't read his book, I'll have read his book by that time. So we're all good. What's up next?
And now for something completely different.
Oh, yeah, something completely different. And it's actually not even that different, because my notes here on the page simply say, more Pope stuff. Okay, I was reading, what was it exactly? Yeah, I can't remember exactly what it was. Anyway, it was yet another news report of Pope Francis doing something that, to the media's mind, seemed decidedly un-Pope-like and untraditional Catholic, where he's doing something kind and forgiving and generous. And the media loves to report on that and always heralding it as some massive change in the Catholic Church and what an amazing guy this Francis is. And it wasn't so much what it was specifically this time. I can't remember if it had to do with transsexuals or gay marriage or what he was talking about. But it's always, I find really fascinating the commentary underneath it. It's all internet stuff. And looking at the internet comments about it, invariably, it's always the same sort of response, in that people get really angry that, you know, some people are heralding this as, oh, this is so wonderful, this is great, and then others have to point out that, well, yes, but he still sees this as a sin, and these people aren't welcome here, and women still can't practice in the clergy, and they have to point out all the horrible things that the Catholic Church still stands for, and that Pope Francis has said over the years, and all of this stuff. And it's just this outright rejection of the whole thing, throwing out all of it, saying, well, he's still not a liberal, so why should I care? Well, here's why you should care, and here's the point I make, is it's the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is not going anywhere, all right? We all understand that. The Catholic Church is there. And so there are two choices for the Catholic Church. Is either the Catholic Church will stay the way it's always been, and Or the other option is, there is no and to that, either the Catholic Church stays the way it's always been, or the Catholic Church starts making changes and starts moving forward in ways that I would like to see things change. And if the Church is going to change at all, which, by the way, even if you're not a Catholic, even if you're not religious, the Catholic Church is huge and influential, and what the Church does, what the Pope does and says, makes a huge difference for this world and makes a huge difference in everybody's lives because it affects policy all over the globe. So you should care, even if you don't like the Pope, even if you don't like the Church, even if you hate all religion, that's fine, that's your choice, but you should still care what happens. And so do you want to see the Church stay the same, or do you want to see the Church change and modernize? And if you want to see it change and modernize, guess what? This is the only way it's going to happen. You're not going to have them elect a Pope who shows up and suddenly turns everything around and says, hey, guess what? We love the gays. Yes, guess what? Women have equal rights. Hey, guess what? Priests can get married. Hey, get, you know, all this stuff, that they suddenly are going to change their opinion on everything all at once. That's not going to happen. But what is going to happen is incremental change in positive ways that brings about more fairness and love and togetherness and unity, making positive changes to the world. And if you want to see change, this is how you're going to see it. And again, you don't necessarily have to like what's going on. But I guess all I'm saying is you should recognize that this is a positive change. And you can recognize that it's a positive change and encourage that without having to accept everything that the Church teaches, if that's not your bag. I mean, you can still make your point that, hey, this isn't enough. We still want more and need more, but we appreciate what's being done and hope that it continues. I mean, that's, anyway, I saw it, and I saw it in a couple of places, and just the wholesale thought of it's either all or nothing. Either you're completely on my side, or I'm sorry, I have to reject you entirely regardless. You know what? It's as my wife just pointed out, same as the Boy Scout situation. I've talked many times about how much I love scouting for my kids, and I love being a part of it, and I think it's a wonderful positive influence. But I also feel that there's also some things wrong with it at the higher levels, and I'm glad that things are moving in a positive direction. And I have encouraged that, and I have relatives that I've had arguments with about it, because to them, they reject scouting outright because, look, if we can't have this, then I can't be any part of it. I can't even be connected to it. I can't say anything nice about it. It's like, yeah, but it's not all like that. It's not everybody who does it. Just like, for example, the conversation I had about Indiana last week. The majority of businesses in Indiana don't want to discriminate against gay people. The fact that there's a law that says that it's okay for them to do so now doesn't mean that even a significant percentage wants to do that or would do that. They know how bad that would be for business if it got around that they discriminate. So even though it's just a vocal minority that gets legislation like that pushed through, a vast majority of business owners don't want it. So it, I don't know. Anyway, I'm confounding things now. But the whole point is, I completely lost myself. I sidetracked myself with getting into Indiana. I think I overreached there. I shouldn't have gone there. I should have stopped with the scouts. That was a good spot. Because if I had stopped at the scout spot, I could say, hey, look, yeah, it's still not perfect. I'm part of the organization, and I am one of the ones who is willing to say to people that, yes, it's not perfect, and we need to change this, and we need to fix this. I'm just, you know, not the kind of guy who's willing to, you know, move up the ranks and devote my entire life to scouting so I can be one of the higher-ups that makes that decision. But I will be very vocal from the inside at my level saying, hey, this isn't right, and I'm glad that we are making these changes. I'm glad that it's coming about, and I hope to see full inclusion down the road. I think that's what we're shooting for. That's what we want. That's how I would run things if I were in charge, which I'm not. But, you know, maybe someday. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, all right. I have also a nerd rage, but my mind is really disjointed. Again, I'm short on time. I'm sorry I keep saying that. I'm repeating myself a lot. But my nerd rage has to do with sports talk. And I will bring that up next week. I promise I'm coming back to this nerd rage. So, you know what? Let's put it all down. End our meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. You know what it's time for? It's time for a little Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me, hey, Ron, about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my slightly broken forums, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And hold on, let me get my Pod-O-Matic list pulled up. There it is. And the number is 42. How nerdy. 42 is from Zimney. Hey, Zim. Zim says, do you adapt RPG monsters to local culture? For example, would a Jewish vampire still avoid crosses? Oh. Well, I don't know. A vampire of any sort is, somebody asked me a while back, probably even you, Zim, somebody asked me what weaknesses should vampires have in games. And, look, vampires should avoid holy symbols wielded by those of true faith. So therefore, I mean, look, the vampire himself isn't necessarily Jewish or Christian or whatever belief system is built into my role-playing game, because they're undead. They are tools of evil. They are incarnate evil at this point. So therefore, they wouldn't follow necessarily any of those particular religions, but they would be driven back by, again, the true faith of a believer in a religion. So I've never run a game set in the modern world that has vampires in it. So that's not necessarily, see, this is one that would require a lot of thought because I'm getting focused in on the whole Jewish vampire concept, which I personally think isn't really applicable. But do I adapt RPG monsters to local culture? Well, I don't know. I suppose so. I mean, in an episode way back when I talked about racism, sexism, and evil in Pathfinder, I talked about, and I've said this many times, I don't like monolithic species, races, creatures where, you know, all dwarves are like this. All elves are, you know, all dwarves are stoic and greedy, and, you know, all elves are flighty and magical and blah. I like that different races, and this also applies to monsters, can have different cultures depending on where they show up in the world, and they will act accordingly. I don't even like the fact that in most Dungeons and Dragons Pathfinder settings, humans somehow have a multitude of languages that you can learn, and yet all goblins speak goblin. No matter where you are, they speak goblin. Maybe a dialect of it, but it's all still goblin. I don't like that. I like them having individual cultures and individual specifics. I mean, they can be different individuals on a personal level, but even the cultures of creatures can be different in different areas. In some areas, the goblins are more vicious and warlike and more like vermin or pests, where, you know, in other areas, you know, maybe they found a way to live at peace with the people around them, or a way to, you know, that they're more in hiding and, you know, living in a subterranean world, or they're, and for goodness sake, there should be more goblin languages than there are human languages, because they get so fractured and set against each other, even more so than humanity would. And yet, the problem with that then is it complicates the system. You know, right now, my character speaks like 11 languages, working on more. And eventually, I'll be able to cover most stuff. That as a single person, I'll cover enough languages that I can get most people we run into, I'll be able to have a common language with them. But if we had, you know, 50 different goblin languages and 4 different elf languages and 7 different dwarf languages, in addition to the, you know, 8 or 10 human languages we have, et cetera, et cetera. It would get really, really complicated in the game. And suddenly, you know, it's not so valuable to you to learn, you know, Varisian goblin when you know your adventure's going to be taking you somewhere else, and the goblin that they're going to speak, you know, over in, I can't even think of another land nearby, Chalaxian goblin, although that's close enough that they probably speak a similar dialect. Anyway, those details don't matter. I don't even know why I'm dwelling on it so much. I don't know. It would make things way, way, way more complicated, which maybe is not a bad thing, but it's a lot to keep track of. But anyway, so the short answer to your question is, yeah, I think I do. I wish I could come up with some better specifics of how I have actually done that. But yes, I think I do. I like more realism in my games, or more, not realism necessarily, but verisimilitude, I suppose is the right word, if I even know what that word means. And I'm not sure I do exactly, but I think it means that, and that should work for me. You know what? We're going to move on. 69, dude. 69 is from... Oh, it's from Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, ooh, F. Mary Kill. F. Mary Kill, Daffy Duck, Roger Rabbit, SpongeBob SquarePants. Huh. This is a difficult one. Let me see. Well, maybe not so difficult once I think about it. All right. F. Mary Kill, I've been given 3 choices. I have to choose 1 for A Night of Passion, 1 to marry and stay with for the rest of my life, and 1 that I'll just kill off. So, Daffy Duck, Roger Rabbit, SpongeBob SquarePants. All right. Of those 3, I know I'm going to marry SpongeBob. I know. It seems like he'd get a little too much. He'd get on your nerves after a while, but he's so happy and so positive, and things always seem to work out for him, and that would be better, I think, long-term than the bitterness of Daffy or the I could not put up with Roger Rabbit I think Roger Rabbit and SpongeBob are sort of on just, you know, different points on the same sliding scale here, and Roger Rabbit would be too much. So I'm going to go with SpongeBob for the Mary. So that leaves me Roger Rabbit and Daffy Duck. My instinct is to want to kill Roger Rabbit, which would leave me for my Night of Passion with Daffy Duck, which doesn't sound all that exciting either. Although, all right, you know what? Roger Rabbit apparently has the patty cake skills to satisfy Jessica Rabbit, so he's got to have something going on there. I could put up with that for one night. I just got to see. I got to know. All right, and then I'll kill Daffy. There you go, settled. 95 is too far. There we go. 95 is from Billy Bob again. Wow, go man. All right, Billy Bob says, Billy Bob says, tattoos? Unusual scars? How will your loved ones ever identify you in the morgue after a horrible disfiguring accident? Yes, Lisa? My wife is here, so she will tell you how she's going to identify me in the morgue after my disfiguring accident. Yes, dear? Yes, I have a huge dark birthmark on my butt. It is very dark and prominent, and it would be easily identifiable in the morgue. That's absolutely true. Well, I also have a lesser birthmark. I have a tiny, faint brown birthmark on one of my ankles, but I don't even think she knows that that's there because she's probably never even noticed it. It looks like a bruise until you realize that it's always there. Potentially by the scars on my chest from where they took out cartilage from my ribs when I was little, or the scar on my hip where they took out bone chips to help reconstruct my gum line, or all of this because I have the cleft lip, cleft palate. I've had lots and lots of surgery. So I have lots of scars from that. And so those are all very, very easily identifiable features. But no, the first thing she's going to do when she gets there is, well, I don't know, it could be him. Roll him over. Oh, yeah, that's his ass. Yep, that's definitely him. So that's how she'll identify me. Good question, Billy Bob. 52. 52 is from Zimny. All right, Zimny, good to see you again. Zim says, if you were a box of cereal, what cereal would you be and why? Oh, well, obviously it has to be something sweet. I don't know. What an odd question. Let me see. Because at this point, look, all I want to do is just pick my favorite cereals, which would be, I don't eat breakfast cereal a lot, but when I do, it's always some nostalgic throwback to when I was a kid. I want to eat Crunch Berries. I want to eat Lucky Charms. Something like that. But that's not really the question. The question is, what kind of cereal am I? Got any thoughts on this one? Something nutty? I don't know. Honey Nut Cheerios? Aw, a little nutty, but also sweet. All right, you know what? I'm going to go with my wife's answer on that because I can't come up with anything better. 36. Oh, hey, I don't even have to roll the page. Oh, it's from my son. This is from Noah. Noah says, Dad, if you were a superhero, what would your weakness be? Or else, where is your weak point? I'm a little bit concerned about this because I think he's looking at how to take me out in case I become corrupted with power. That is a great question, Noah. If I were a superhero, I would have, I'm going to go with, Martian Manhunter's weakness. I'm allergic to fire. Yeah, don't get me near fire. It burns me. How's that for a terrible weakness? Duh. Fire burns everybody. Or else my weak point. Huh. This is a good question. Let me put a little thought into it. Oh, wait, no, I got it. I don't have to think about this one. My weakness is my family. That's where I'm vulnerable. I'm like Peter Parker, who's afraid to get close to people because he's just putting them in danger. Or Daredevil, because I just finished watching episode 7, like literally an hour ago, and it was awesome, where he's being warned not to get close to anybody because you're only going to put them in danger. Well, that's where my weakness is that I love my family, and I would do anything for them, and if some supervillain finds out my secret identity and threatens my family, yeah, what am I going to do? That's my weak spot. There you go. That was an easy one. Well, okay, it wasn't so easy. I had to come to it now. But once I realize it, it's obvious once I've hit upon it. There you go. 68. We did 69. 68 is... Hey, Zimny again. All right, Zim. What kind of dinosaur... All right, what kind of dinosaur would you ride into battle if you were attacking Mordor? What kind of dinosaur? Well, look, obviously, I would ride into battle on a Triceratops or a Stegosaurus. One of those two. Triceratops, probably. Because, again, we've covered this. That is a badass way to ride into battle on a Triceratops. The things are massive. Not quite elephant-sized, but pretty darn close. And just fearsome looking with the three horns and the whole business. Oh, yeah, this is great. Stegosaurus actually... not bad, but with the spiked plates, do I have to remove one of those spikes across its back to make room for my saddle? I would feel bad about that. Or can you just ride up on its neck? I think that would look less dignified. I'm going to go with the Triceratops. I'm pretty sure that's the good one. Why am I attacking Mordor? That just seems like it seems like I have a death wish, doesn't it? Does one simply ride a Triceratops into Mordor? You might. 92 comes from Ronster. Hey, Ron. Didn't think you were going to show up this episode. If your friends had heard that you had been admitted to the hospital, what would they assume it was for? You guys, you can't see this, but every single question you guys ask, I read it. My wife glances at me, laughs to herself, and then turns away quickly because she doesn't want to tell me what she's thinking. That's so funny. So give me just a second to pause this while I weasel it out of her. Just a second. Wow. As it turns out, my wife is not very funny. She thinks she is, but she's not. If you were admitted to the hospital, what would the people around you assume it was for? And my wife says, that you tried to fix something around the house by yourself? Gay, that's not fair. I've fixed some things without injuring myself. I'm less of a complete basket case than I used to be. If I were suddenly admitted to the hospital, I would assume, let's see, all right. Oh my God, did you hear that Mike's in the hospital? And then they would say, really? Was it? And then I think they would assume some sort of accident, but they'd probably assume car accident. Not that I fell off of a ladder trying to fix the roof. I don't think that would be the, yeah. Well, that was my dad. That was my dad. My dad was actually on top of a ladder and he was trimming a tree and he was standing on top of the ladder and trimming the tree and he fell from the ladder. Like 11 foot down, that's the number in my head, but it could have been a shorter or longer fall than that. I don't know. And he wound up landing on his garden shears, and they went up through his armpit and pierced his shoulder. And he thought he was going to lose complete use of that arm, and it turns out he didn't, and he's fine now. But that was, what was that, a dozen years ago? That was really scary. So I'm not my dad. I've never fallen on my own garden shears. I did once fall over because I tried to flip somebody off, and I went a little too hard on it. But in fact, I was flipping my dad off. I think it was. To be fair, maybe I haven't told you this story before. I think I have. To be fair, my dad was being a serious butt about something, and when I went to flip him off, I was doing the double flip off. So I was using both hands, and I kind of revved way up, so I got my arms way back behind me. You can't see it, but I'm doing it right now just to demonstrate so you'll get a better sense of it. You can hear it in my voice, right? All right, so I got my arms way back behind me, and I suddenly throw them both forward, and I give them the double flip off both at the same time, and I did it a little too hard, and I lost my balance, and I fell over on my ass. So if I were admitted to the hospital, it could pretty much be anything at this point. I'm just generally kind of clumsy, I guess. I'll cop to it. It's fair. 52. I think we just did 52. Let's find out. 52. We did. That was Zimny. Let's try again. 24 is from Stan. All right. Stan says, my title is Animal Ball Puritan. How cool is that? That is really cool. The titles on the boards, if you come to my broken forums, oh no. Oh, I just finished all the titles too. Now I'm sad. I just realized that if I have to move the boards over to something new, my current boards are set up so you get a new title every 25 posts, and those titles are different for every post, starting at 0 and going all the way up to 10,000, and you get a new title every 25 posts up to 10,000. And I just, with some help from people on the boards, I just came up with the last, four or five dozen that I needed to fill out that list. And I got them all done. And now I just realized if we have to move to new boards, I probably lose all of that. Because I think even if I import, even if I go to version 3 of the boards, there's an import option. But I think the import option only brings over the users of the board, and then all the posts. I don't think it does all of the details. Nothing for formatting, nothing for titles and specialty stuff. Oh, that's sad. But for as long as we have the titles, for as long as these boards last, Animal Ball Puritan is a pretty darn cool one. So I'm right there with you, Stan. 87 is from Daz. What a nice variety we have here today. Daz says, why do some people call Pathfinder Mathbinder? Does this mean that it's complicated and I should stick to old-school D&D? I don't know what you mean by old-school D&D, but yes, there is a lot of math involved in Pathfinder, but no more or less so than Dungeons & Dragons 3 or 3.5. It is... Here's the deal. If you're playing old school D&D and you want to stick with it, if you're in first or second edition, hey, more power to you. I understand why people stick with the old editions and don't want to move on. I'm locked into Pathfinder and I skipped over version 4 of D&D. I'm probably going to skip over version 5. I'm happy where I'm at. But of course, also, fortunately, I'm in a system that is still being currently published and supported. So there's that too. But yeah, if you're in one of the earlier versions of Dungeons and Dragons, yeah, there's less math, but there's more charts and tables that need to be referenced in the middle of a game. And there is less customization. And that's where it all really comes from, is the idea that starting in Dungeons and Dragons 3 with the introduction of feats, once they put in, because even the skills aren't necessarily that complicated, but once you introduce feats to it and you know, certain character powers and abilities that can be customized per level, then yeah, there's a lot of modifiers that go into it and a lot of math that is involved in adding all those up. And that's the price of customization in a system that was already as complex as Dungeons & Dragons. And I make no apologies for it. I absolutely love it. And it's the kind of thing that, you know what, start playing at first level or second level. Start off somewhere low where there's not a lot of options yet, not a lot of things you need to add up. And then as the game progresses, once you get to fourth level, fifth level, sixth level, you start seeing how the pieces go together. You start researching the options for your own character. You learn it as you go. It's not as difficult as it seems. So, again, me personally, I love it. Absolutely love it. I can understand why people would say that. I've never heard of it being referred to as Mathbinder, but I get it. I don't think it's as egregious as all that. There are games out there as complicated in their own ways, some more so, some less. Obviously less. There's tons of games out there that are really wicked simple. But by the way, I'm gonna start trying to use the word wicked more often. I mentioned last episode how much I love because I said something about wicked smart, and then I got a comment from someone who said, "Oh, I didn't realize you were from Boston." Well, I'm not from Boston, but I am from New England. I did live in upstate New York for 9 years at different times. And one of the phrases from when I was a kid was wicked. Wicked cool, wicked smart, wicked awesome. Wicked awesome happened a lot. And I loved the term wicked, and I'm sorry that it's fallen out of favor. And although I hear that people who still live in that region still use wicked, which I think is wicked cool. But I brought it up because my wife and I were looking at t-shirts online, and there was one that it was a t-shirt that had a map of New England on it. And the caption on it was New England, because Old England was wicked stupid. All right. And I laughed because I thought that was really, really funny. And I'm trying to explain that to my son. And as I'm explaining it to him, and I'm trying to explain to him how much I love the term wicked, and I wish it would make a comeback. And I said, you know what? I should start applying wicked to all sorts of stuff. Well, then later we're having a different conversation, and I was referring to someone who had said something a little misguided or whatever. And Aiden looks at me and says, "Oh, yeah, he was wicked misinformed." And I'm like, "Oh, see, now that's the appropriate use of it. You use wicked in front of something that clearly is way too long and awkward to have wicked in front of it. Wicked is supposed to be wicked cool, wicked awesome, wicked. I mean, it's supposed to be something, you know, just, it's an expression of I don't know, it's just cool, fast slang. It's not meant for something formal, but he says, yeah, insert wicked into formal conversation. It'll be even more effective there. So I'm going to try and do that, which has nothing to do with the question about Pathfinder, Mathbinder here. But since I did use the word wicked unintentionally there, I figured I would give you guys the whole spiel. All right, tell you what, let's do one more, and then we got to wrap up. 84. At least I don't have to go far for this one. 84 is from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, if you had to choose all of your children's names from one sci-fi or fantasy series, what series would you select? That is fascinating. I want to say, off the top of my head, why not Game of Thrones? If I had to pick all of my children's names from one fantasy series, why not Game of Thrones? Because guess what? There are 2,000 characters with names in that story. I think I pretty much have my pick of whatever I want. As long as it's, the vast majority of them are, you know, vaguely medieval English sounding, but I can live with that. I mean, look at the names I already picked. They're very traditional. So I would be cool with that one. But, I don't know, any sufficiently large series. I mean, I suppose, Even even in the Star Wars universe, with the number of movies and TV series and books that they have available for Star Wars. I mean, you know, you say Star Wars, and it doesn't necessarily mean that my two oldest sons have to be, you know, Chewie and Yoda. There's all sorts of people out there. So, I don't know. Do I go with the Harry Potter series? Do I go with... No, not Harry Potter. All right, we've got it covered. She decided that we would name all of our kids after characters from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. So our oldest son would be Rufus. Our second son would be Napoleon, which I think actually works for him. Let's see. What do we got? Third son would be Genghis, which he loves Genghis Khan anyway. So he's perfect for that one. And then what do we name the youngest? She's not helping. There you go. And then Billy the Kid. Those would be our four children. Rufus, Napoleon, Genghis, and Billy the Kid Jones. Oh, Beethoven. Nah, Beethoven's just asking for him to get picked on. I think we're better off with Billy the Kid Jones. I like that one. All right, that was the last one. So, with the Podomatic out of the way, there's nothing left but for GLaDOS to come out and give us a recap of this episode. Go on, GLaDOS.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's In the Garage and Wonderful World by Sam Cooke. All these songs are available on iTunes. You check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to get your very own pocket mod, you go to pocketmod.com. They will give you instructions for printing up and folding your very own pocket mod for free. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy it, spread the word. Let other people enjoy it as well. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com. I promise I will actually respond to you. You can find me on Twitter where my handle is @nerdprideradio, or even check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me, even though they're broken, is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. Sign up, send me a message, we will hang out, we will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. Well, the end credits are done. The music is done. That must mean it's time for listener betrayal. Before every podcast, I put up a message on my broken forums that says, hey, I'm recording. Do you guys want to add anything? And then while I'm talking, you guys put stuff out. And today I put out that message, and then I got sidetracked because my son wanted some help studying for a physics exam. And so I actually didn't get started for a couple hours. That thread's been open forever. Hopefully it's not too long. Let's see what we got here. Done. Close that sucker up. All right, back to the top. And it says, oh, first response is from Eliahad. Eliahad says, do you believe in signs? the movie Signs, yes, I've seen it. It exists. How about signage? Well, obviously. And how about sign language? That one I'm a little iffy on. I know it's there. I can fingerspell. I understand that they're supposed to correspond to words, but you know what? It's all just hand-waving to me. I think people are just making it up. They may not actually be saying anything, and it's all just a big ruse. It's a big elaborate plot, as far as I can tell. Eliahead continues, in the last 10 years, what is the longest you've gone without cell phone service, and how does that make you feel? The longest I've gone without cell phone service was probably about a week at Scout camp back before cell coverage was as thorough as it is. And I mean, even then I could still head up to the top and I could get cell service if I needed to, but for most of the week I was completely out of range. But how does that make me feel? Yeah. You know what? It never did bother me. It still doesn't bother me. Is it? I guess, when I have to be away from you guys, it makes me sad, but you know, you deal with it. I'm okay with being out of range. I don't have to have the you know, as much as I seem to be addicted to my phones and my computers and my stuff, if I don't have a connection, I'll find other ways to entertain myself. I'm all right with that. What is your favorite alcoholic beverage of choice? Whiskey and Coke. I mean, any whiskey is fine, especially if I'm mixing it with Coke. But I can also appreciate really good whiskey as well. Anything expensive. And I don't drink very often, but when I do, it's not Dos Equis. That's what I'm saying. The Punch Brothers' new album, The Phosphorescent Blues, is amazing. If you like progressive bluegrass instrumentation, but a super modern rockish sound, I highly, highly recommend it. Holy crap, I do love progressive bluegrass instrumentation with a super modern rockish sound. I mean, I really do. That actually sounds right up my alley. I will check them out. So, Punch Brothers. All right, I will try and remember that. All right, that was all I had. Stan says, dude, he spelled it with several U's. What's your sign, Aries? Lucy says, could you please give us a sign? All right, you can't see it, but I'm giving it to you. Talvin says, signs, everywhere signs. You guys have hit on the theme that you like? which is uncanny, because we were coming back from camp this morning. It was just me and Noah. And we were coming back from camp this morning, and the song Signs was actually on the radio. And he apparently had never heard it before, but he said, you like this song? I'm like, yeah, I like this one, sure. He's like, yeah, this is good. I like this song. All right, cool. Talvin then has a separate post that says there are 2 minutes difference from 4 to 2 to 2 to 2 from 2 to 2 to 2 to 2. The sixth, he's giving me tongue twisters now. There are 2 minutes difference from 4 to 2 to 2 to 2 from 2 to 2 to 2. I don't get that one. Although there was a picture recently of, what was it? A ship, shipping ships. Have you seen that one? That's uncanny. The sixth, six sheiks, sixth sheep is sick. Yeah, that's true. That was my favorite tongue twister as a kid. Because it was listed in the Guinness book as being the hardest tongue twister in the world. And how they classified that, I don't know, but Guinness said it, so it had to be true. Pad Kid poured curd pulled cold. Oh, I can't do that one at all. Try Toy Boat. Toy Boat. Say it 5 times really fast. Go ahead. No, go ahead. I'll wait. You screwed up on the third one, didn't you? Toy Boat? Is that what you said? Boit? Yeah, that's not even a word. You guys suck. And then I saw Susie sitting in a shoe shine shop. Where she sits, she shines, and where she shines, she sits. Oh, I can see where that one's going. That's really good. All right. Talvin then adds, let's see. Talvin then adds, this is another post yet, to sit in solemn silence in a dull, dark dock, in a pestilential prison with a lifelong lock. Awaiting the sensation of a short, sharp shock from a cheap and chippy chopper on a big black block. To sit in solemn silence in a dull, dark dock in a pestilential prison with a lifelong lock. Awaiting the sensation of a short, sharp shock from a cheap and chippy chopper on a big black block. A dull, dark dock, a lifelong lock, a short, sharp shock, a big black block. To sit in solemn silence in a pestilential prison and awaiting the sensation from a cheap and chippy chopper on a big black block. I've never heard that before in my life. Oh, God. Okay. You hit on it. I was literally just about to say Luke Luck. I swear to you, I wish I had said it before I rolled down, because the Fox and Socks is my favorite of the Dr. Seuss books. Always has been. Luke Luck licks lakes. Oh, no. Luke Luck likes lakes. Luke's duck likes lakes. Luke Luck licks lakes. Luke's duck licks lakes. Duck takes licks and lakes Luke Lux likes. Luke Lux takes licks and lakes duck likes. Oh, duh. I was trying to go fast because, again, when I was a kid, I brought this book to my grandfather, my mom's dad, and I asked him to read it to me, and I thought I was being really clever because I knew it was a tongue twister, and I knew it would get him messed up, and I just wanted to see Pawpaw mess up on a tongue twister. And he intentionally read the entire book really, really slow. And no matter how frustrated I got with him, and no matter how many times I told him, you can't read it like that, he insisted on carrying on at a nice, slow pace. And so I wasn't going to be that. I mean, you guys are offering me a challenge. I wanted to get through as quick as possible. And since I'm really familiar with Fox and Socks, I thought for sure I would nail that one. And I failed. I failed. But of course, you know what? I stumble over my own intro, which I wrote and is not a tongue twister. And I read every single week, and yet somehow I still stumble over that 80% of the time. So I don't know why I thought I could handle Fox and Socks. I'm crazy. Hey, next post is from me. It says, done. Say goodnight, R2. Say goodnight, Lisa.